When we want to weigh the moral heft of a political decision in this country, we don't crack open a philosophy textbook. We pull up a stool at the nearest bar and ask, does it pass the pub test? But why is that our gold standard? The term's been bandied about this week as Labor MP Annika Wells has been under scrutiny for a taxpayer-funded trip to New York for the UN General Assembly, as well as paying for her husband to join her at Boxing Day cricket tests and AFL grand finals. And there's no allegations of wrongdoing here, and she is the Minister for Sport, so you kind of got to give her that. But it doesn't mean that regular people have thought it's okay. So where does this gap between what's legal and what we think is right coming from? And which pub are we all supposedly gathering at to answer this question? I am about to get into it with our resident ethicist, but tell me what you think. What's your pub test? How do you decide what crosses the line? And with me is Patrick Stokes. He's Associate Professor of Philosophy at Deakin University. He joins me fortnightly for a chat that I call Ask Aristotle. Pat, I feel like we should have popped across the road instead of into a radio studio and had this chat at the pub.
Little bit early for me, but yeah, okay, you go right ahead.
Fair enough. Where did this idea of the pub test come from, do you know?
Well, I don't know. I actually think in some ways it's the everyday layperson's equivalent of what's known in legal circles as the man on the Clapham omnibus, which is this idea that...
The Clapham omnibus.
Yeah, which is this idea. It's from this early 1900s legal judgment where there was this idea of what would the ordinary person who you just happen to run into in a public space think? And that's been very persistent, actually. The Lerman decision, Justice Lee's decision in the Lerman defamation case, not that long ago, he actually used that phrase. He said something about the average person on the Belconnen omnibus. So it's... It's a very persistent idea, and the pub test, in a way, I think, is just that. What does an imagined average person think of this? Would they think this is okay, intuitively okay, not okay? And, of course, the problem is there's really no such person.
Yeah, I'm thinking, like, how do they even test this? Do they go into a literal pub and ask people? Like, has anyone even studied this?
No, I mean, you could say that in a way that's precisely what focus groups and so on are doing. But I mean, there's always some kind of selection bias involved in a way, like, you know, your focus groups will tell you what the sort of people you can get to do a focus group think. And that's fine. Somebody once said psychology is just the study of the mind of the American undergraduate student, because that's basically who they can get into the studies. But, you know, there's a little unfair. But, you know, there's this problem there about, yeah, how do you actually kind of empirically test this sort of stuff? You can get broad population level data. But in a way, I think that's not really what people are thinking of when they think of the pub test. They think, what's my kind of intuitive reaction? What do I just intuitively think? Yeah, that's fine, or nah, that's not okay. And how do I give that legitimacy? Well, I filter it through the idea of this mythical bunch of people sitting around in a pub that are just talking and just bandying ideas around and saying whether they think it's okay or not.
On the text line, someone said, we do not all like the pub, only like izakaya. Which I think for me kind of speaks to this idea of, like, what kind of ye olde Australian pub do we have in our minds, or what are we trying to evoke or invoke when we're talking about these sorts of things? And is that even still a good representation of Australia?
Well, this is the thing, right? I mean, the pubs near me in the sort of inner north of Melbourne where
it's
all,
you know, fancy
big,
town up there.
Yeah, big unapproachable hipster beers and stuff like that, you know, that's going to be a different pub with a different set of views and so on. I think what's imagined is actually a kind of British and Irish small town model where the pub is essentially an extension of everyone's living rooms. And it's a public space where you just run into other people and everyone knows each other and you talk to people. That's firstly not most people's experience of the pub. I think that it's also always imagined as a suburban or even a country town pub, even though this country has basically had a highly urbanised population since colonisation. We've never not been a predominantly urban country. But we imagine it as this kind of place where authentic, real people gather and they chat about these ideas. And again, you've got to be really careful that what you're doing is not simply recycling your own uninterrogated assumptions or your own prejudices and putting them into the mouth of someone who you think speaks with a kind of cultural authority.
You're listening to Life Matters here on ABC Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor talking to a resident ethicist, Pat Stokes. I like the way the word residence makes it sound like you live in the ABC somewhere in a cupboard. We take you out once a fortnight to talk about philosophy with you. And today we're talking about the pub test, kind of inspired by the scrutiny that's been on Annika Wells this week. She has referred her claims for audit by the Independent Parliamentary Expenses Authority for what it's worth. That's an independent body, so maybe we don't need to invoke the pub test anymore. But it hasn't stopped us from talking about what it kind of really means. Molly from Rockhampton texted in yesterday to say, I'm weary of hearing the pub test. The majority of Australians are not chronic hotel habitues. Rule by a rowdy drunken mob is not desirable for any community. Please stop referring to the pub test. All of us are or have been members of a family of varying types. What about the family test or the street test? We do not need anything to be passed by drunks in hotel bars. Pat, is the pub test fit for use in 2025?
It depends on the use. And this is the interesting thing. On one hand, yeah, that's exactly the right point. Why would we think that people in a pub are any better equipped than anyone else, right? But I think the idea of the concept of the pub test is that it's just a communal space. What does, like the person on the Clapham omnibus, what does the person you run into on a bus think? The person you run into in just shared space where everyone just happens to be. So somebody who's free from selection effects and things like that, just the average person in the street. But again, there are going to be purposes for which that's not the appropriate test. And this is actually an interesting thing. The first recorded use of the phrase, the man on the Clapham omnibus in British law, was actually instructing a jury to say, now remember, the relevant fact here is what a certain class of experts think, not what the man on the Clapham omnibus right. thinks. That was actually a case that I was saying to the jury, don't, it was actually about, it was a defamation trial against like an art critic. And he was saying to the jury, whatever your views of the artwork are, don't matter. This is about what critics think, right? So there are going to be certain circumstances where the pub test is simply irrelevant because it is in fact a matter of expertise or it's a matter of expert opinion.
That is a really interesting bit of context to chuck in here. The other thing that I'm interested in looking at is sort of where this idea of an everyday person, when we sort of started caring about it. On the text line, one person says, this is sort of an ancient practice, weighing an idea sober and then drunk is an ancient Persian practice. If they sound good at both times, you know you have a winner. Have you ever heard of this branch of philosophy before?
No, but I'm very keen to do some empirical studies on this. It sounds very useful.
What do the ancients have to say to us about the value of an everyday person's view?
Well, it's interesting. If you go right back to the ancient Greeks, Socrates spends all his time just asking randoms in the Agora, right? So in a way, he is asking the person on the bus. He's down in the Agora is the marketplace, right? He's just down there talking to random people and saying, hey, what do you reckon justice is? Or what do you think goodness is? Or what's holy? You know, now, in
no,
a way...
Like, who are you? Get away from me. I'm just trying to do my shopping.
Yeah, they weren't entirely wrong to put him to death, but it was... He does seem to have just genuinely been quite annoying. But it's interesting that, you know, there's something to be said for that, that, you know, even for somebody like me as a philosopher, right, most of what I'm doing when I'm writing papers or presenting at conferences, I'm talking to other experts in a kind of expert idiolect. We're dealing with problems that I don't expect the ordinary person in the street to have an opinion on, because why should they have to? But so many of these questions do come back to things that people do have insight into, do have kind of wisdom into. And it's really important to actually... even for me as a philosopher, sometimes to talk about the sort of things that I'm working on in a way that people can understand and get people's reactions, get how they respond to it. Because there is a kind of everyday practical wisdom that people bring to their tasks, to their understanding of things, to the way they form their opinion. And it's important to at least see what people's intuitions and what people's reactions and things are, because as I say, there's a kind of a wisdom in crowds in that way.
I mean, that's the whole basis of democracy, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, in theory, this is the other thing with democracy too, is if you accept that, you know, everyone has a degree of sovereignty, you accept that there are going to be people who don't know what they're doing, who nonetheless their vote counts as much as yours does, and that's just what you have to put up with. I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean that everyone's right and wise and knows what they're talking about. It just means that everyone gets a say regardless.
So many people objecting to the term pub test on the text line. Maybe it's not as Aussie as we thought. Bill says, I'm not comfortable with public affairs being determined by people who frequent pubs. For example, what would that mean for our climate policy? Julian Castlemaine says, I hate the pub test. It assumes that sensible analysis comes when you are influenced by alcohol and drunkards. Another says, these days, your local cafes give a better cross-section. And Chris says, I think it should be the granny test. If you want a brutally honest opinion, ask an elderly lady who's seen everything and isn't scared to tell you how it is. Pat.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. The nonna test is absolutely a very, very wise one. Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely true. Yes, grandmothers in particular will absolutely speak to you with a certain... So many years ago, like when I was in an undergrad, I was on Sale of the Century when they did the University Challenge thing, if anyone remembers that show.
What? Did you win?
And my grandmother immediately rang me up and she hadn't seen me for a few months and she rang up and said, well done, but get your hair cut. And that is the sort of wisdom that you can only get. Even people in the pub won't give you that. That's the sort of wisdom you can only get from your grandmother, rest her soul.
Do we need a different way of talking about this, or is the pub test fit enough for purpose, given that we kind of know what it means?
I think we do, in the sense that, first of all, as you say, we don't all spend all of our times in pubs. I think there's a whole bunch of ideas about who is authentic and who should be listened to and who gets to speak that are built into the notion of the pub test that I think we need to be really wary of. Also some gendered assumptions. When you picture the pub test, are you picturing a bunch of women standing around talking or are you picturing a bunch of men? So that's a really important point. There's racialized points to it as well. But also too, there are certain discussions where it's really wise to ask yourself whether or not the opinions of the ordinary person in the street are the relevant factor or not. Sometimes they are, sometimes they're absolutely essential. Other times we are talking about topics on which our own opinion may not actually count for much because we may not have the expertise, we may not have done the work necessary to have an opinion on this, and you need to be really wary about where that line is drawn.
So a text here says, politicians often talk about kitchen table discussions regarding certain issues and the pub test with others, fascinated by the different assumptions around what is domestic issue and what is public.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really, really interesting one, isn't it? The pub test is about the big public things we all get to have a view on, whereas the kitchen table is supposedly about domestic economy. It's about, you know, how we make ends meet, what groceries costs and so on. And of course, you could say that's an entirely artificial distinction. Prices are a function of the market, which are a public thing. And so the cost of groceries and school fees and all that sort of stuff should very much be part of public discussion. I think, yeah, and again, it's often really good to be very, very wary about people who want to draw a line between things that are essentially private matters and things that are essentially public matters. Sometimes it's a legitimate distinction, but sometimes that can be used to hide a whole bunch of things that we should be talking about.
Pat, it's always so enlightening speaking with you. Thank you, as always, for joining me today and this year.
Thanks, Tegan. See you down the pub.
See you at the pub. Patrick Stokes is an Associate Professor of Philosophy at Deakin University. He joins me fortnightly for our ethics segment, Ask Aristotle. Tim in Ballingen says, Tegan, what about the sniff test? If it's good enough for milk, it's good enough for politicians. And another says, the test is, would you spend the money if it was your own money? If not, don't spend the taxpayer money.
Listen to more great stories that take you beyond the headlines. Ask your smart speaker to play ABC RN.